So Ram, it occurs to me that you and I have an overlap in Delhi of a few years. When did you move there?
2000.
You moved there in 2000. I leave Delhi in 2007. So 7 years. So I immediately recognize the Delhi that I know at some level in your piece. But what I find fascinating is that you actually have got into the upper class, which I really didn't have much of an... I wasn't interested, perhaps, or there was no natural corridor into this place. How did you meet these people?
Well, I set out to meet them, and I think that the period that you're talking about, from 2000 to the present, is a time where those people have become more and more prominent in the kind of subconscious of the city, the way that people talk about the city, the things that they aspire to, resent, hate about their own city. And for me, a lot of the changes that had happened in the city during the time that I lived there, and this is pretty much the first really serious examination that I'd done of this city that I'd lived in now for nearly a decade. A lot of those changes are very much connected to this new money and this the energies that it unleashes in the city.
Mm-hmm.
The people themselves are quite visible. One sees their cars and the way that they walk into nightclubs and all those kinds of things. But I think even beyond that, and one of the things that I really wanted to write about is the kind of the shifts of power and consciousness that this unleashes in the classes around them.
Mm. I already found Delhi quite innovative when I moved there in 97 compared to the Delhi I knew in, say, 92 or 80, 89 or something, where it was already like, my God, there is money in this town and there is serious arrogance. I mean, the two incidents that you talk about, one is the incident of the BMW with the drunken young rich boy, which plows through six people at night driving at 140 kilometers. And the other incident that you talk about is the murder of Jessica Lal, who was working as a... She was a model working as a bartender, and she refuses a rich boy a drink late at night in this private party, and he pulls out a gun and puts a bullet through her head and then gets away with it for 6-7 years till he's finally caught. Those kind of define... Those two incidents, in a sense, define my stay in Delhi as well in this respect. That this is what you can get away with in Delhi if you're rich, if you're connected to the politicians, if you're connected to the judiciary. But you also find something quite positive in this raw, nouveau riche energy, which is kind of against the grain of, say, the normal intellectual take on the super super wealthy, isn't it?
Well, I think that the nouveau riche, it's not really whether it's positive or negative. There is just pure raw energy there, which is always impressive when you encounter it. And I think these people, one side of their role in society is the kind of thing you're talking about, the sense of unlimited power, the ability to get away with absolutely anything, and if they feel like it, essentially to destroy people around them for their own private pleasure. But the flip side of that is an incredible ambition. And I think that these people feel that their moment has come. In global terms, they have lots of cultural competence that their counterparts in New York and London don't have, in the sense that they are connected to many different kinds of worlds, from rural India,
feudal India, to small town politics, to
exactly. They're unabashed. They know how management consultancy firms work. They know how bribing politicians in a small town.
They've been doing it for years.
All these things are part of their vocabulary. And so they look at the world as a place where they can function easily. There is not an outside to their world where they don't know how it works.
Money in Delhi and the rich in Delhi are different from the rich even in Bombay.
Absolutely.
And are very different from the rich in Calcutta or Madras or...
Absolutely.
You know, for example, I think there are institutions being built in the south, which the rest of the country will have to follow one day. But the Infosys people or the Wipro people or other, you know, they are much less ostentatious, the southern millionaires.
The people that I'm talking about in this article are a particular set.
Set of people, yeah.
They're not the people who made money in the 80s and 90s in computers and technology and all those kinds of things. They are the people who've made money primarily in real estate through the massive expansion of the city of Delhi into the surrounding rural estates. And those people are an interesting set of people because if you're going to make big, big money in real estate, you have to have a lot of political connections, because you have to somehow acquire all this land, which is historically owned by farmers, and that requires political influence.
But I think what's also happening with this money is that a kind of power, a kind of confidence, a kind of education is also not just trickling, but kind of flooding into the middle class and what we would have called the lower middle class.
I think what you're saying is true, that that civil society is changing fast along with them. There really is a thriving middle class. I mean, I've just come back from Egypt. It's very different in Egypt. There is not that empowered, stable middle class that feels that its own long-term ambitions can be fought for and secured in the public realm. It's interesting that that in these cases, and there are several of them, not just the two you mentioned, which have become really high-profile moments where powerful young men have just gone out of control, then bought off all the witnesses, and sometimes, not always, ended up in jail a few years later. Often the thing that has brought them to jail is not actually the operations of the police and the judiciary.
It's public opinion.
Sting operations by the media based on public opinion. Public opinion has been so outraged by the fact that these guys have got off that organizations like the Helka, the magazine, and a number of TV channels have actually gone underground, posed as people, found out what's actually going on, and brought it to public light. So there is a strong and possibly growing kind of movement, I think, in civil society to right all these wrongs and make sure that things...
I mean, you put it, there's another beautiful phrase. You say there's a delicious nausea around these murders or these killings. But at the same time, with the Jessica Lal murder, we saw that there was a huge SMS text campaign going on, thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, not necessarily all of them rich, not necessarily all of them English-speaking middle class, were sending this viral SMS around, saying, bring this guy to justice, don't let him off. And that kind of caused the government and the police and people to actually act, which I found was a bizarre but quite beautiful example of modern technology doing something it's not necessarily supposed to do. The piece that I'm planning to write for the work issue of Granta kind of connects with yours in the sense that it's not about Delhi and it's not about the super rich, but it is again about the effects of this new capitalism, if we can call it that. It's about how the nature of work has shifted. For example, the guy who comes to sell me my internet connection, the way he will talk, he will have the patter of an American door-to-door salesman.
Yeah.
But he will also be sort of uncomfortable with it. He'll be uncomfortable with the English he's being taught to speak. And he therefore creates a completely different kind of English, a different kind of body language. And I want to get into the head of this guy and figure out what work means for him.
I mean, it's interesting, because I think that there is definitely a kind of ventriloquism that happens of the language of global capitalism entering people who are very new subjects of it, and there is an awkwardness possibly, but I find that a lot of people are instantly comfortable with that language, and in fact,
well, they recreate the language to their own purposes. Delhi, the way, I mean, one of the things that happens in Delhi is what happens to English. I find absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
I mean, I have cousins who work in call centers in Delhi, and
you
their
do? cousins,
yeah,
right.
And the way that they speak about themselves, the way they spend their leisure time, what they want to achieve in their lives, is completely taken from business language.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about branding themselves, marketing themselves. They talk about their
value profile,
add,
yeah,
all
value
that kind of stuff. It's an intense kind of reordering of the way that people think about themselves with respect to work. Work provides not just work, but a particular formation of work provides a new sense of dignity, a new sense of interiority even.
The other thing I was kind of looking at is the fact that people will continue to make more and more money, but their growth will be horizontal rather than vertical. So they will die richer, or they will retire richer than when they started. But in terms of their class, or in terms of their culture, or in terms of their power, or how branched they are, they will not really have quote-unquote risen in society, because that's again a new kind of horizontality that's spreading all over India.
Mm. Do you think that it's possible to place a verdict on everything that's going on in the world of work right now, or is it just inevitably full of different kinds of experiences for different people?
I think verdict is not my job. I mean, I think there'll be some work which will be absolutely horrifying. There'll be other bits of work that will be very, very freeing. There are people who are actually poor but managing to do different kinds of work which their mothers or their grandmothers, the women, could not imagine. So I am just going to look at how work is shifting and changing and try and put together a kind of composite portrait. Verdicts are dangerous, as you know, because the moment you pronounce one, I mean, that's why I like your piece a lot, because you actually examine the rich, you make us laugh at them, but at the same time you point out that there is this throbbing energy which you cannot ignore. And I think in a sense I'm going to go and look at another profile of that same throbbing energy that's coursing through India right now.
Well, I think that's why we're interested in this thing, is that because there is all around us a throbbing energy you just can't ignore. And what it is, and how you can express the intensity with which it enters your life is part of the project of trying to write these kind of pieces.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why, I mean, you kind of have to experience it yourself and you have to decipher it momentarily. For that moment, you have to decipher it. And then you know that 5 years later, the whole situation will be different again.